It's always hard to bid farewell to those you love. For the X-Men, gathered on the rain-slick landing pad behind Moira MacTaggert's Muir Island Research Center, it's harder than most, because they never know if this farewell will be their last.
The Blackbird's fueled and ready to go. I guess it's time we got on our way.
Aye, it's been good having you all here these past few days. After Proteus, we all needed a rest. I'm sorry to see you go.
I'm sorry you're not coming with us, Sean.
Until me sonic scream heals, if it ever does. I'm no real use to you, boyo. And after the last few days, Moira needs me now more than ever, even if she won't admit it.
I understand. I wish you well, both of you.
Scott turns from the couple to Jamie Madrox, standing beside him.
How about you, Jamie? We are short an X-Man. We sure could use you.
Sorry, Cyclops. Not really my thing. Powers or no, I'm really just happy here helping Moira in the lab.
I understand.
Goodbye, my friends. Take care.
Minutes later, a shrill jet scream shatters the silence over Muir Island, and six unique men and women begin their long journey home. Their mutant names are like an unsung roll call of honor. Nightcrawler, Cyclops, Wolverine, Colossus, Storm, Phoenix. In many ways, they are the best humanity has to offer, and for the moment, all is well in their madcap, helter-skelter world. Unaware that this is merely the calm before the onslaught. Calm at least, but for one.
I killed him. I killed Proteus. I know that he was evil incarnate. That it was his life, or Moira's. But does that make what I did right?
There is no answer to Peter Rasputin's anguished thoughts. Only doubts about his life as an X-Man that gnaw insatiably at his heart, his soul. The Blackbird streaks westward at five times the speed of sound, rapidly overtaking a larger, slower corporate jetliner marked with the stylized logo of New York's legendary Hellfire Club. The paint on the jet's hull is as black as the heart of its only passenger. For the past few months, he's gone by his given name of Jason Wingard, wearing the face of a gentleman rogue. He's also taken great pains to become the most important person in Jean Grey's life.
Each time it becomes easier to touch Jean's mind as our psychic rapport grows ever stronger. And why not? I'm merely giving her a taste of her innermost forbidden needs and desires. Within her angel's soul, as in all our souls, lurks a devil, a yang counterpart to the surface yin. All I'm doing is freeing that negative part of herself from its mortal cage.
Wingard smiles, concentrates, and miles away, Jean Grey's world turns in on itself. When at last she opens her eyes, the Blackbird and her friends are gone, for her time has apparently slipped backwards 200 years, and she is once more Lady Jean Grey, now en route to America with the man she loves and will soon marry.
Oh no, not again. Everything has changed. I'm on a ship.
A man turns towards her. His name is Jason Wingard. He is a true gentleman, and the most magnificent man she has ever known.
Anything wrong, Jean, my dear? I thought I heard you cry out.
He walks over to her, placing his hand upon her face and holding it gentler than it has ever been. She melts to his touch.
I know we've had a rough passage, my darling, but we'll soon be in New York. And then you'll be mine forever.
Yes, Jason. Oh, yes. No! What am I doing? The emotions he stirs within me. So intense. Must break away while I can. My head aches so, Jason. I'll be fine once I've had a breath of fresh air.
I'll accompany you.
No! Thank you. I prefer to be alone.
Desperately, her telepathic powers scour the ship, but they only confirm what her senses have already told her. This is reality.
I thought these time slips were caused by Proteus's reality warping power. It seems I was mistaken. But the alternative is so incredible. Can I actually be psychically shifting in time, reliving the life of one of my ancestors? I suppose for the power of the Phoenix, anything is possible. That scares me. And what really scares me is that these time slips are happening more and more often. Suppose I'm trapped in the past. What will happen to my body in the present?
M'lady.
The captain. Wait. I know that voice. Scott.
I saw you come on deck, ma'am. Is there anything troubling you, Jean? Jean. What's wrong? You're as white as a sheet.
Jean watches as before her eyes the captain of the ship morphs into Cyclops himself, and her time returns.
I'm okay, Scott. Just a little air sick.
How are you? It's been almost 2 months.
2 months? Really? I had no idea. It felt like only a few hours. I can't really describe it.
I'm glad you're home.
Me too. It's just...
What?
Nothing. Forget it.
The days that follow are quiet, lazy, perfect for relaxation and reflection. Scott Summers and Jean Grey walk the mansion grounds, the oranges of the later months of the years taking shape, the crisp, golden leaves blown before them in the gusting wind.
I'm glad you stayed up here, Jean.
Professor X asked me to. He wants to run some tests. I caught a stray thought. He's worried I can't control the Phoenix's power.
Scott does not answer, instead getting the door for his love, like a true gentleman.
Something wrong, Jean?
Hmm? Oh, no, Scott. Not as long as you're around.
She kisses him on the cheek, the two heading indoors.
Where is everyone? They should all be up by now. Ah, I hear the danger room running. Let's check in on...
Wolverine, where are you going? Wolverine!
The door is swung open with a loud bang. Wolverine storming from within the training area.
Wolverine, what's going on?
I ain't no kid anymore, Summers, and I ain't no flaming amateur. So where does Chrome Dome get off treating me like one? You tell him what I'm telling you, bub. Wolverine don't jump through hoops for nobody.
Sounds serious.
It is. I should have seen this coming. Maybe I did, just not so soon.
Scott walks up into the danger room's upper level, the control room from which Professor Xavier directs the training session.
Professor, can I talk to you? It's important.
In a moment, Scott. Nightcrawler, now we'll test your agility and wall-crawling abilities. Storm, your airborne maneuverability. And Colossus, your strength. Scott, notify Wolverine that his childish outburst will cost him 10 demerits.
10 or 10,000, Prof. I don't think he cares. Wolverine is a grown man. This team, they're adults. They aren't kids like we were, and you can't treat them like they are. I tried it that way, and I failed.
Yes, well, I'm not you.
No, but you haven't been around the new X-Men much since the team was formed. You left their training up to me. I've worked with them, fought with them. They're individuals. We're individuals. We can't mesh into the same kind of team as the original X-Men because, well, we're not the same kind of people.
Forgive the bluntness, Scott. But to me, that tells me that you have failed as a leader. This anarchy is a result of you failing to make them into a team.
Professor, we are a team.
I have failed in my duties as the leader of this school, and this team. I left their training up to you because I thought you were up to the task. Obviously, that was a mistake. One I will now rectify.
How do I reach him? I know I'm right, but... Huh?
Cerebro's contact alarm. I managed to automate it and set it to alert me whenever it finds something. It appears we have a new mutant.
Xavier makes his way over to the unit, now with a secondary interface in their current location. He turns on the screen, places the helmet upon his head, and checks the results.
We'll finish this later, Scott. I'm picking up 2 new mutants, both manifesting abilities I have never seen before, both potentially quite powerful.
This is crazy. To him, I'm still the untrained kid who he allows only so much responsibility, but who ultimately answers to him.
One in Chicago, and one in New York City. That means if we're to contact them as quickly and as efficiently as possible, we'll have to split up. You, Nightcrawler, and Jean, take the New York contact, Scott.
I'll take Wolverine, Storm, and Colossus with me to Chicago. I want to see how they operate in the field.
Miles away, in the chambers below the infamous Hellfire Club in New York City, a man watches this all from the point of view of Xavier's own screen.
Poor Xavier. If he only knew. That tap on the Cerebro unit appears to be paying off. Your man did his job well. What's your next move, Shaw?
We go to and find those new contacts, and we get them within our ranks first. Whatever it takes.
And the X-Men?
If we happen to acquire or kill a few of Xavier's puppets along the way, all the better.
You underestimate them. They won't go down easy. Trust me, they're dangerous.
So are we. And the X-Men will soon realize that, won't they, my dear White Queen?
As you say, Shaw.
Chicago, the Windy City. Celebrated in verse by Sandberg, in song by Sinatra. Home of one of the world's tallest buildings and, so they say, the best pizza. 3 million plus people live in this sprawling, tough, passionate, old new metropolis. Our concern, however, is not with the city itself, but with one of its suburbs. Specifically, Deerfield, located roughly 25 miles northwest of the Loop where, on Central Avenue, on this fine summer afternoon, Catherine Pride is heading home from her dance class. She's 13 years old, going on 14, and her world is slowly falling apart.
Hey, Mom. Hey, Dad.
Kitty, come in here a moment, will you?
The young girl does so, looking upon a tall, blonde woman dressed in white that is standing with her parents, her appearance of a teacher complete with a pair of glasses upon her nose.
Kitty, this is Miss Frost. She represents a very good school in Massachusetts.
Hello, Catherine. I'm sure we're going to be great friends.
Hi.
Are you all right, Kitty? You're home awfully early.
I had another one of those damn headaches.
Language! Maybe you should go upstairs and lie down. I'll bring you some aspirin in a minute.
Kitty does as she is told, making her way upstairs.
I don't need aspirin, Mom. I need a new head. This one's about to burst wide open. I guess Mom and Dad are serious about splitting up, if they're talking about sending me away to a school. I told them I didn't want to go. I like it in Deerfield. All my friends are here. What I want doesn't count. Where's they find that Miss Frost, anyway? She looked at me like I was something good to eat. Ugh. She gives me the creeps. Ow! Come on, head. Give me a break. What did I ever do to you? Ugh, jeez, it hurts.
She can't help crying as she sprawls on her bed, the throbbing pain gouging deep lines around her tight-clenched eyes. She's been having these headaches for weeks now, the attacks steadily increasing in frequency, duration, and intensity.
This one's the worst ever. Please, God. I'm only 13 and a half. I can't be dying. Somebody stop the hurting. Please make it stop.
Then it stops. Just like that. Slowly, gingerly, Kitty opens her eyes.
What the? I'm in the living room. How'd I get here? Last thing I remember, I was lying on my bed.
Kitty? I thought you went to lie down. What are you doing lying on the floor, for goodness sakes?
Mom, I came down for a glass of water and snagged my sneaker on the carpet. I fell.
You okay, kitten? Hey, what's the rush? What about your water?
I'm fine, Dad. I'll get it later. I gotta do some homework.
Shortly, the Prides are outside, seeing their visitor off.
I don't know what's gotten into that girl, Miss Frost. I apologize for her behavior.
You needn't be, Mr. Pride. I understand perfectly. Kitty's at that awkward age. You have my school's brochure. I'll be in touch. The father likes my school. The mother does not. I'll have to make sure his view prevails. Well, look who's here.
As Frost walks the sidewalk, she spies Xavier and three of the X-Men coming the other way towards her, Peter pushing his professor's wheelchair.
Xavier and three X-Men, right on schedule.
As they pass, Wolverine can't help but turn for a look.
Nice looking gal. Something about her scent, though. Raises the hairs on my neck. Wonder why.
Mr. Pride, I'm Charles Xavier.
Ah, yes, from the School for Gifted Youngsters. Pleased to meet you, Professor. I'm Carmen Pride, folks. Come on in.
The group follow him inside. And as Carmen Pride speaks, Xavier looks up the stairs towards a curious girl who peers from behind the wall at them.
This is my wife, Terry.
And unless I'm mistaken, that young lady is the one we've heard so much about. How do you do, Kitty?
Hi. These people are weird. That guy pushing the wheelchair is so huge. Kind of neat looking, too.
Kitty, your mom and I have, business with Professor Xavier. Since you seem to be feeling a lot better, are you interested in a trip to the mall with his students? My treat.
And so, a real quick change, an 8-block walk, and a triple scoop super-duper ice cream soda later, a kid from Middle America and an African goddess are well on the way to becoming fast friends.
We got black kids in my school, Aurora, but none of them look like you. I mean, you know, white hair and blue eyes.
As far as I know, Kitty, I'm one of a kind, and so are you.
You mean, 'cause I'm so smart?
No, something else. Kitty, have you ever heard of the X-Men?
Sure. They're superheroes or something, mutants. My dad says they should be locked up. Heard they are just in a big fight in Scotland. Hey, are you them?
We are. Professor Xavier said it was all right to tell you.
Wow. Can I have your autograph?
So much energy and life and joy. If not for an accident of war, I might have been like this at Kitty's age. Instead, I was walking along across the Sudan. I hadn't yet learned I could soar on the winds in that desert. I almost died.
Meanwhile, behind them at the magazine rack, Peter looks over in embarrassed curiosity as Logan browses Penthouse.
Hey, this ain't no library, fella. You want the magazine? Buy the magazine.
I don't like being tapped, bub. Or ordered around.
Wolverine? No.
And I don't like people reading without paying. You wanna make something of it?
I thought you'd never ask.
Wolverine, behind you!
Huh? What the hell?
The two look over, seeing armored men having crashed through the front of the store and now running towards them.
We found the X-Men. Take them!
By the White Wolf! A flamethrower! I barely managed to change them to my armored form and shield the store owner from the blast in time. Even so, the heat is incredible. I can actually feel it.
Fella, I don't know who you are. Frankly, I couldn't care less. But right now, you're the answer to my prayers.
And at the Wolverine's command, gleaming adamantium claws pop out the back of his hands.
I've been looking for a decent fight. I'm much obliged to you clowns. What the? My claws didn't even touch the creep. He's protected by some sort of force field.
The blow hurls Wolverine the length of the store. Instinctively, and with a yelp of mingled surprise and fear, Kitty Pride kicks herself backwards to get out of the way. That kick sends her a lot farther than she'd anticipated.
I'm outside. I pushed myself right through the wall. But that's impossible. I feel so tired, dizzy. Never felt this way before. Want to stay awake, but can't.
and inside what's left of the store.
Kitty's gone. She must have slipped away with the store owner and the other children. Good. I'm glad she's safe. I wish I could say the same for me. I'm hitting this villain with all my elemental powers. Wind, rain, lightning. Yet for every attack, he has a defense. Wolverine and Colossus don't seem much better off.
Storm! Each of them seems equipped to counter our specific powers. Let's see what happens if we switch partners.
Wolverine's idea worked. I'll handle Colossus's foe. See if my lightning bolt can affect the last man's force field.
They can. They do. Colossus finishes the job.
Pleasant dreams, Tavarish. These men knew our powers and how to defeat them. But how?
Let's wake the suckers up and ask them. I think I can persuade them to tell us all they know.
But suddenly...
A telepathic attack. Assaulting our minds. So powerful.
They fight the mental ambush using psychic techniques taught them by Professor X and Phoenix. But the outcome is never in doubt. With a smile, Emma Frost, the White Queen, watches them fall. Dressed now once again in her white fur-topped cape and revealing corset garb.
They're unconscious. Load them aboard the hovercraft.
Yes, ma'am.
Emma Frost watches the Hellfire's henchmen pick up the three X-Men, loading them aboard the waiting hovercraft outside.
Wingard was right. These people know their business. But the Hellfire Club knows every facet, every perimeter of their mutant powers. Their strengths, their weaknesses, how they fight, how they think. That gives us an unbeatable edge. Let's go. After we turn these prisoners over to the lab, we'll go after Xavier himself and see if we can't make this a clean sweep.
Yes, ma'am. But what about our three armored units? We left them inside and...
Oh, don't worry about them, Cutler. The Hellfire Club has ways of dealing with failures.
As the hovercraft takes off, the store behind them goes up in flames.
They had the tools and the training sufficient to defeat the X-Men without my help. They botched their job. And now... the explosive charges in their armor have rewarded them for their handiwork. Don't act so shocked, Cutler. We pay good wages. We expect our money's worth.
Staying on the back roads to avoid detection, the hovercraft makes its way swiftly down the lake shore towards its base, a massive industrial park on the outskirts of Chicago. And within the craft...
Strip them... search their uniforms and their persons. Carefully remove anything that might be used as a weapon or signaling device. Take special care with Storm. We know about the lockpicks in her headdress. Make sure she hasn't any other surprises. I'll keep them telepathically sedated until we reach the lab.
What about the girl? The Pride Kid?
She escaped in the confusion. The X-Men were always our primary target. Now that we have them, she'll keep. When we want her, we will know where to find her.
Actually, to find Kitty, all the White Queen needs to do is turn around.
I did it! I concentrated and I'm walking right through this wall from the rear compartment. I feel tingly all over, but not as tired as the last time. And my headaches are all gone.
Kitty carefully makes sure to stay hidden behind a wall.
Oh no! That creepy Miss Frost and her goon squad are holding the X-Men prisoners. Why did I decide to snoop around in here? I gotta help them somehow. But how? These guys have guns and powers. And I'm all alone.
X-Men, the audio drama, The Dark Phoenix Saga, Episode 2, A Girl Called Kitty. Narrated by Sam Devereaux, starring Natalie Winter as Jean Grey, Omri Rose as Cyclops, Rex Anderson as Wolverine, Stephen Chesterton as Colossus, Tyree Peterside as Storm, Jason Rivers as Charles Xavier, Jeannie McGuinness as Emma Frost, Maddie McGuinness as Kitty Pryde, Tommy Grabietz as Wingard, Ryan Craig as Sebastian Shaw, Steve Porter as Mr. Pryde, Catherine Black as Mrs. Pryde, John Anderson as Banshee, with Keith Seymour as Cutler and the Hellfire Goons. Music by Declan Gilgallon. Written by Chris Claremont and John Byrne. Edited and directed by Carl Dutton. Sound effects sourced from freesound.org and Pond 5. X-Men the Audio Drama is a fan production with no affiliation with Disney or Marvel Entertainment.